D. We just wondered if you had anything in any of your writings about my Drashim. S. This again caused him to become upset. I will speak not of this. D. There's no way we will know the answers unless we ask questions. S. Why do you have questions that show only partial knowledge? D. We have heard of these things and are asking if you can either verify them or help us further in our knowledge. Sometimes we have only bits and pieces of information. S. Interrupted. It can be dangerous to have just partial information. D. This was a surprise. You think it's not good for us to know these things? S. It is of concern, yes. In speaking of things that you know only partial of, and invoking words of power that you may know only these scatterings of, you may be dealing with more than you will be able to handle. This took us off guard because we certainly didn't realize there was any danger involved in asking simple questions. We said we would abide by his judgment and asked what he suggested we do. S. Speak no more of it until you have the knowledge that may be gained. Because to speak of it to those who might trick you in some way into revealing what you have to better their cause, this could be very dangerous. D. How are we to get the other knowledge unless we ask questions? Is it allowed for us to seek? S. Seeking is allowed, but be very careful. D. It is not always easy to find the right people who can give us this information. S. It is true. But you must always protect yourself from those. And questioning 131 from saying too much to those who begin asking you questions in return. D. Then you think it is better not to seek this knowledge? S. I said that not. This is your meaning of that which I spoke. I state only to be careful. And to guard who you would share your knowledge with. And receive little or nothing in return. D. Well. The knowledge is enough. S. No. The knowledge can be very harmful. Because you would be tempted to use it. And not having full knowledge, could cause danger, to yourself and to others. I thanked him for warning us. This outburst was most unex-soft-pected and certainly out of character for the placid Suddy. He had refused to answer questions before but never came on so strongly. I still wonder what it was that we asked that triggered such an emotional reaction. I returned to my questions, a little more cautiously this time. D. Have you ever heard of a book called The Cabal or The Kabbalah? S. Some of us have read it. There are scrolls that contain some of the writings, yes. D. Is it a complicated book? S. Everything is complicated. Fu would make it so. It explains many of the laws of nature and balance, how to use these for your own good. How to open oneself up to what worlds surround us in this world and others. He did not know who had written the Kabbalah, but it was older than many of the other books they had. Later, when I had a chance to do further research, I may have discovered the reason Harriet's question upset him so. I found that Hebrew theology is divided into three parts. The first was the law which was taught to all the children of Israel, the second was the Mishnah, or the soul of the law, which was revealed to the rabbis and teachers, the third part was the Kabbalah, the soul of the law, which contains secret principles and was revealed only to the highest initiates among the Jews. The Midrashim referred to methods used to simplify or more fully explain the laws. Apostrophically, we had unknowingly crossed over into a secret area of teaching which Suddy and other Essens were involved in. Maybe Jesus and the Essens. This explains his emotional outburst and his warnings about using words of power and speaking of things of which we had no knowledge. The translators of the Dead Sea Scrolls speak of the Damascus document and think there were probably other Essene communities, possibly one in the Damascus area. But I trespassed on forbidden ground when I asked about it. He answered in the now familiar, I shall not speak of this. It was strange how it bothered him to answer certain questions, yet he would answer similar ones with no difficulty. D. Do you know anything about an Essene group in Alexandria? S. Long pause. My father says that they have recently spoken of some teachers who have gone, not to Alexandria, but to Egypt. But I do not know. Did he ask his father? There are many others. There are one that I know of in Egypt. There are several in the area surrounding Israel, Judah, name of another country unclear, but it sounded like said, phonetically, there are many. We add, Grana perhaps one of the larger but not the only. Strange how he only objected to speaking of the one at Damascus. He said that to his knowledge the other communities were also isolated but they all had the same principles as Quran. The accumulation and preservation of knowledge. They were far from being a single isolated small group of people. If we were to preserve knowledge and we just stayed among ourselves, this very small group, how in that would the knowledge be preserved? If it was safeguarded by us and not shared. Therefore there should be others also. D. Some people have the idea that is what it is, a very isolated group that doesn't associate or pass the knowledge on. Some are fools. Scientists and Arabs scoured the caves in the Qumran area looking for more scrolls or fragments. In one cave, among the rubble of a caved-in wall, they came across a rare find, two copper scrolls. Scrolls had always been written on either papyri or leather. This was very unusual. Originally, they had been one continuous strip about 8 feet long by a foot wide and had been cut apart for some unknown reason. The archaeologists could see symbols questioning 133 stamped into the metal, which was also unusual. But weather and time had taken its toll. The copper had become so oxidized that the scrolls were dangerously brittle to handle. They were so fragile it was impossible to unroll them. For 4 years they worked on the problem of how to open them safely. Finally, Professor H. Wright Baker of the University of Manchester, England, devised an ingenious method to cut the scrolls into strips. It worked so well that not even a single letter was lost. After all the trouble, was it worth it? After translation, the scrolls were found to contain a treasure hunter's dream. They were lists of buried treasure worth fabulous amounts. The inventory included gold, silver, and other treasures possibly weighing more than a total of 100 tons. Their estimated worth was over $12 million in the 1950s when the scrolls were translated. They would be worth much more now. The scrolls gave exact directions for 60 different burial or hiding places in and around Jerusalem and in the Judean desert. The description of the scrolls and their translation is given in The Treasure of Copper Scroll, by John M. Allegro. He gives a detailed account. He was positive it was the inventory of an actual treasure and that the objects were buried in the places indicated. His only doubt was in the incredible amounts. He thought there must have been a mistake in translation, the amounts were too breathtaking. For instance, a total of more than 3,179 talents, a weight measure, of silver and 385 of gold. 165 gold bars, 14 silver pitchers and 619 vessels of precious metals. The directions were explicit, in the cistern which is below the rampart on the east side, in a place hollowed out of rock, 600 bars of silver. All of the directions were this exact. Mr. Allegro says most of the places indicated would probably have been difficult or impossible to find after the Roman War devastated the area. None of this treasure has ever been found. The last entry on the copper scroll gave directions to the location of another copy of the same inventory, concealed in a pit adjoining on the north the great drain of the basin near the temple. This duplicate copy was never found. Some of the archaeologists have come to the conclusion that the copper scrolls are a hoax, that the treasure never existed. They said it had to be a hoax because where could the essence have gotten such fabulous amounts of wealth if they had been sworn to Jesus and essence poverty? The scroll must have been more difficult to inscribe than the normal papyri. It would have been an awful lot of trouble to go to in order to perpetrate a trick. Others say the scroll may not be speaking or an actual treasure but is using symbolism to convey another message that has not been figured out. I believe it was possible for the essence to have either accumulated that much wealth over the years of their existence, or that they were made guardians of wealth from another source. The Bedouin of the area had been a tremendous help to the scientists because they knew every nook and cranny of the desert. It is possible that over 2,000 years, they may have found some of the treasure. Also, because the duplicate scroll was never found, it is possible that someone found it years ago and followed the directions. I believe our modern generation was not the first people to find what the essence had hidden. J. During this last session when I asked questions from my research, I decided to see if he might be able to shed any light on this puzzle. But how to do it without asking leading questions? Sudhi was in the library on the upper level studying some scrolls, so it was the perfect environment. When I asked if he was studying any particular scroll, he answered with the now familiar, "I shall not speak of this." He would only say that it was not the Torah. When he went on the defensive about certain subjects, it was no use trying to get the answers, unless I could do it by roundabout methods. D. Do they ever make the scrolls out of any other material besides the skins and the papyri? S. There are other methods of making them. I am not a copier. I'm not familiar with them, but there are other ways, yes. D. Have you ever seen any scrolls that are made out of metal? S. Yes. This apparently was another forbidden topic of discussion. He became suspicious again. Why do you ask? D. I thought this would be an odd material to make them out of. It would be a lot more work. Wouldn't it be harder than using the stylus and papyri? S. Coldly, yes. He asked suspiciously, why do you ask these questions? Questioning 135 D. S. I just wondered why they would making one out of metal. They would contain more important in things that must be protected. Go to all the trouble of formation. There are some. He would not elaborate further. It seemed that if something were written on metal, it would be because it had special value. They were trying to use the most durable material to make sure it would survive. Thus I cannot believe the copper scroll was a hoax. The archaeologists were just 2,000 years too late to uncover this fantastic treasure. The archaeologists who excavated the ruins of Qumran have made no mention of finding any housing area. They have come to the conclusion that the people lived in the caves around the community or perhaps in tents or huts. They found pottery, lamps and tent poles in some of the same caves that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in and thought this suggested that they lived there at one time. I could not understand why the Essens would live in caves and tents when they were able to create this wonderful community with its marvelous water system. This did not make sense to me. I decided to pursue this. D. You told me before that when you were a child you lived in houses that were away from the community, outside the walls? Are there any caves in the vicinity of Qumran? S. There are many caves. D. Do your people ever live in the caves? S. They said at one time they did, but there are not enough here now to have that as necessary. However, as children, we used to play in them. D. You mean at one time there was more population? More people there? And during that time they lived in the caves? S. Yes, it was in the beginning. This was in the early times while the houses were being built. I thought that this would be the case. With such a wonderfully advanced community, it would not be necessary for the people to be reduced to living in caves and tents. During the excavations they found many coins, even bags of them. This helped the scientists to date the ruins. The coins Jesus and the Essens belong to the time periods from 136 BC to 37 BC, covering the period of Jewish independence and extending to Herod the Great. Then there was a gap, only a few coins found that were issued between this period and 4 BC, the time of Herod Archelaus. There were a large number found dating after 4 BC to 68 AD, when Qumran was destroyed. On this evidence the archaeologists have come to the conclusion that Qumran was abandoned for 30 years, since they found only a few coins from that time period. But this was the time when Sudhi was living there and according to him the Essens never left. Even the scientists could not come up with a satisfactory reason why they would leave. They could see evidence that the community had experienced an earthquake. See the drawing of the Kumasoft-Nitti. And they assumed this might have damaged the community to such an extent that the people left for these 30 years, but this is only an assumption. Even the ancient writers, who were so thorough in their histories of the time, do not mention that the Essens were ever absent from the area. This was only the archaeologists' theory based on what facts they were able to come up with during the excavations. I conclude that if the entire treasure of the copper scroll could completely disappear, why not bags of coins? The ruins were known to have been occupied and ransacked by the Romans during the invasion. There were also other peoples that lived there afterward for a while before Qumran was abandoned entirely. I feel the archaeologists' findings do not contradict mine, but rather offer an alternate explanation. I wondered how to ask him about this without putting ideas into his head. It would have to be worded carefully. D. Can you tell me, Sudi, have the people lived there in the community all the time since it was built? S. Explain. D. Have your people always lived there in the community continuously, or was there a time when your people left? S. You speak of the time of the hiding. Yes, there was a time when they left for a period, yes. It has been spoken about. But this occurred before his lifetime. During his time there was never a time when the people abandoned the community. Ruins of Qumran showing the crack in the bathhouse steps. 138 Jesus and the Essens in the drawing. It can be noted that the earthquake damaged one end of the community and left a large crack, part of which ran through one of the baths. The archaeologists also found evidence that some of the damage was repaired, especially around the tower. I wanted to ask about this, but I could not mention the word earthquake. D. Do you know anything about any natural catastrophes that have occurred since you have lived there? S. Pause, as though thinking. Ah. You mean when the... I remember when I was little my mother said that there was the shaking off cliffs. At one time there was great earth that the whole place would fall off into the sea. I was 2 or 3, maybe, I'm not sure. I have no memory of it. D. Did it do any damage to the community? S. There is a handspan gap where that part of it slipped and fell. Apparently he meant a crack. I asked where it was located. She used hand gestures in his explanation. S. Let me think here. It is along the wall. The wall runs like this, the cliff wall, and it is on that way. On that corner, toward the bathhouse and the assembly hall and that area. It runs through in a diagonal. I think this last word is correct. It was hard to understand. D. Did the crack go through the bathhouse? S. Yes, but the crack was not so that the water escaped. It was repaired. The people of the community took it in their stride. They knew it was about to happen, therefore there was no loss of life. They had been told. Did he mean psychically? D. But the damage was not bad enough that the people left? S. For a while I think they probably stayed away while the repairs were being done. They could have gone anywhere. They could have gone and stayed only in the housing. They could have gone perhaps to caves. As I say, I was too young to remember. I only know what I have been told. I do not remember never being here. D. I have heard it said that your people abandoned the Kamusoft-Nitti for many years. S. We made them think so. If they forget us, they leave us alone. D. But surely people would come and rob you if they thought the community was deserted and unguarded? Questioning 139 S. Then you better than that. It is never unguarded. This again seemed to refer to some mysterious method of protection. I have presented all of this section in detail so that the life of Jesus may be understood against this background. The people who lived there at Qumran were concerned with one main objective: the accumulation and preservation of knowledge and the passing on of that knowledge through teaching those who were qualified to learn. The Essens appeared to be placid and passive, living enclosed in their own little world. Secluded like this, it was a virtual paradise, a perfect place completely self-sustaining. It was amazingly modern by the standards of Israel at the time. Whenever anyone ventured outside the walls, they saw that there was harsh contrast between their ways and those of the outside world, thus they preferred their isolation. But they were feared and suspected by the others who did not understand them, thus they had to disguise themselves. It appears that the location of Qumran was also guarded and known to only a few. I wonder if even the caravans knew the real purpose of the settlement. Strangers were not allowed in certain parts of the community either. Yet Sudi said that one of their purposes was to pass on their knowledge to the people at large. I suppose it had to be done subtly by the students of the Red Bands who studied and left the community to live in their own areas. I think this section makes it easier to visualize Jesus in this setting and environment. This section displays Katie's great capacity for accuracy and detail about a culture she had no way of knowing anything about. Some will argue that she could have read about the Essenes and Qumran in the same books that I did and was thus prepared for my questions. I know she did no research, she had no interest in it. She never at any time knew what type of questions I would be asking. Throughout the section there is knowledge that is not found in any books. In this chapter there were some things dealing with the Dead Sea Scrolls translations that even Sudi was unfamiliar with. This would be normal since he had not read all the scrolls in the library, or they might have been called by other names during his lifetime. If Katie had been perpetrating an elaborate hoax, she would have made sure she was accurate on all counts and would have been familiar with these translations. I believe the depth of the Jesus and the Essence trance which Katie experienced made deception impossible. She slipped in and out of the personality of Sudi with great ease and literally became this ancient person in all respects during the 3 months we visited with him. I wish to include here some quotes from Josephus that I believe have a bearing on our story. There are also some among them, the Essenes, who undertake to foretell future events, having been brought up from their youth in the study of sacred scripture, in divers purifications, and in the sayings of the prophets, and it is very seldom that they fail in their predictions. They despise suffering, and overcome pain by fortitude. Death, if connected with honor, they look upon as better than long life. Of the firmness of their minds in all cases the war with the Romans has given ample proof, in which, though they were tortured, racked, burned, squeezed and subjected to all the instru-soft-ments of torment, that they might be forced to blaspheme the lawgiver, Moses, or eat what was forbidden, yet they could not be made to do either of them, nor would they even once flatter their tormentors or shed a tear. But, smiling through their torments and mocking their tormentors, they cheerfully yielded up their souls, as those who would soon receive them back again. The Essenes had to swear not to conceal anything from the Brotherhood, not to disclose anything belonging to them to those without, even though it were at the hazard of his life. He was, moreover, to swear not to communicate to anyone their doctrines in any other way than he has received them. This explains the difficulty I had obtaining answers at times, and why I had to turn to devious methods of gaining information. I am surprised that I was able to get it at all. I was trying to make him violate a strict, basic rule of his life, something that people under hypnosis will not do. They will never do anything that is against their morals. But these were not Katie's morals, they were Sudi's. This shows how closely Katie was identifying with the Essene and how completely she had become him. It also explains why it was easier to obtain information from Sudi as a child. He had not yet taken this oath and in his innocence he was unaware that he was revealing anything that was forbidden. We should be grateful that we were able to receive any information, even by hook or crook. This is another example of the great bond of trust that had been questioning 141 built between Katie and me. I do not believe this information would have been released under any other circumstances. Ginsberg related in his book, The Essenes and the Kabbalah, published in 1864, that this secrecy was not uncommon, since the Pharisees also would not indiscriminately propound the mysteries of the cosmogony and the theosophy, which, according to them, are contained in the history of the creation and in the vision of Ezekiel, except to those who were regularly initiated in the order. The Essenes also knew of these teachings. See chapters 14 and 15. Josephus said, they take extraordinarily great pains in studying the writings of the ancients, and select that which is beneficial both for the soul and body. Ginsberg, they apparently studied the ancient books on magical cures and exorcisms that were the reputed works of Solomon, who composed treatises on miraculous cures and drove soft-hyphening out evil spirits. Philo, they use their inner threefold rule and definition, love of God, love of virtue and love of mankind. Note the similarity with the teachings of Jesus. Writers in the 1800s said that Essenism arose out of the deeper religious meaning of the Old Testament, that the Essenes belong to the apocalyptical school, and that they must be regarded as the successors of the ancient prophets, and as constituents soft-hyphening the prophetic school. They adopted some of the old Oriental, Persian and Chaldean ideas, and brought with them some practices and institutions which they mixed up with the Jewish views of religion. Theistians aimed to reconcile religion with science. Chapter 14 Scrolls and Biblical Stories. One of the activities of the community was the writing and copying of scrolls so that they could be passed on to other parts of the world. It was a publishing center, so to speak. S.W. Arya put in charge of saving of records, so that word shall not be lost. It is what they do at the library. Then they take the scrolls and they are sent to many countries and many places for protection, in hopes that at least some of them will remain. There is so much here. There are all the stories, the communications of the different courts, the histories, and the day-to-day life existence. One would be of a great age before you could read all the scrolls. D. Do you know where else in your world the scrolls are kept? Are there other libraries? S. I suppose that there are. I have no way of knowing. The old suspicion returned, why do you wish to know? I tried to fake my way through by saying I was curious and liked to read. If there was something they didn't have, I wanted to know where to look for it. My ruse did not convince him. He asked, would you be able to read them? I had to think fast. I told him if I could not, I could always have someone translate them for me. This did not work either. S. Very few are even allowed to see the scrolls. They must have reasons. This surprised me because I thought anyone could look at them, just as in our libraries today. S. The openers would want to know why. If everyone had this knowledge, they could use it for harm. During the sessions there were many references given to languages spoken at the time. I thought the majority spoke Aramaic. Scrolls and Biblical Stories. S. No, they also speak Hebrew, Arabic, Egyptian. The language of the Romani. There are many, many different tongues. This reference to Romani surprised me because I knew this was what the gypsies call their language today. S. They are the wanderers. It is said that they are two of the lost tribes of Israel. How true this is, I do not know. D. What do the Romans speak? S. Latin Vulgate. Some of them Greek. There are also many dialects of Aramaic. From each little province you come, it is different. Each has its own way of expressing itself. My dialect is simply, I believe, Galilean. Pronounced fast, Galilean. Sadi was able to understand the other dialects, but at times it was difficult. These differences also affected the reading of Arya soft hyphen Maic. S. There are so many ways of expressing, and also the ways of writing are different. Unless you are very familiar, you can read something in there that is absolutely not there. You see, it is like this, one word would mean one thing to me and it could mean something totally different to you. It depends on the way it is in the structure of the letter. Also, if it is spoken, it is the way the voice sounds when it is spoken. It can mean a good many of things. There are several words that mean 5, 6, 7 meanings. They are all different and diverse. This goes along with the other session where he said it was the sounds and not the letters that make up the words. I see it as a type of shorthand where the symbols represent the sounds. If there were many different dialects, the words would have different sounds according to who spoke them. The person who was doing the writing would make the symbols according to the way he spoke the language. I asked an Iranian about this and he said it was true in his language that the same word could have many completely different meanings. For instance, the same word means lion, faucet and milk, each totally different. I asked him how they knew which was the correct word. He said it depended upon the sentence it was used in. When you consider this plus the fact that punctuation marks were not invented until the 15th century, it makes it clear what a nightmare the job of translating Jesus and the essence from these languages would have been. D. Then if someone was to read one of your scrolls, could they get something different out of it? S. It is very possible, yes, to find something totally different than what was intended. Even though the symbols were essentially the same, the reader could get a different story if they didn't know what dialect the scroll was written in. I wondered how anyone could ever know what the writer truly meant to say. S. You would have to take it as a whole and find the way that things fit together. If a word did not make any sense the way that it was in a part of it, then you would have to find another meaning for this. This would explain why some of our stories in the Bible could be different from the original. If someone inserted a different word during the many translations down through history, it would be very difficult to know which way the story was originally supposed to be read. D. Are some of your scrolls in Hebrew?